Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
You ever rock with an artist so hard that the stuff they say, you try to make sense of it in your head, but it logically doesn't make sense?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Oh, are you talking to me?
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back with another of the season preview podcasts, only a handful of them to go now. And to discuss the reigning NBA champs, I am joined by the host of Real GM Radio, the co-host of the Dunked On Basketball NBA podcast, and a writer that you will find in many places, including the new site for The Athletic Bay Area. It is, of course, Danny LaRue. Danny, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. Again, you're a very busy man, so thank you for making the time to chat about the Golden State Warriors, a team that, while they play the most exciting brand of basketball we've potentially ever seen from a fantasy point of view, they are relatively boring because there's not a huge amount that's changing with this team, even though they did get better in the offseason.
That's certainly true. And also, I would say the big factor there is just the way that they structure their minutes. I mean, last year, Klay Thompson had the heaviest workload, and he was only playing 34 minutes a game, which is pretty low by NBA regular season standards. And so that has downsides, especially in terms of counting stats. And, you know, that can lead to some efficiencies and other things. But generally speaking, when the best players aren't playing as much, they're not as valuable in this format.
So normally I start off by talking about the additions to the teams, but I want to talk about that for a little bit more. Do you think that this year with the Warriors, you know, rebounding after the 73-win season and losing the title, you know, getting Durant, winning the championship, do you think that they have, I guess, less of a chip on their shoulder this year, so there might be actually fewer minutes for these guys? And the fact that the team got better by bringing in these players that we'll talk about in a second, that we might see a couple of extra games of rest for Draymond, for Durant, for Steph, or instead of Klay playing 34, he plays 33 and Curry plays 32.5, or they just cut it back by a minute, by just a couple of games. Do you think that's a significant possibility for these guys this season?
I do. I think that last year served as a confirmation for everything that Coach Kerr really values, you know, just the idea that they don't need to play these guys as much. And that really, actually, the necessity is probably the biggest thing here, is that if the Warriors needed to play their best guys 35, 36 minutes a game to win, they would. They just don't have to. And so that isn't changing. I mean, I think they'll be just as good if they're at full strength. They'll be just as good this year as they were last year. They are, as you mentioned, a little deeper. We'll talk about that before. So I would expect that general arc to continue. The part that might be a little bit different is I think they might do more full days off, you know, like maybe. So last year, Steph played 79 games. Klay Thompson played 78. Draymond played 76. And of course, Draymond missed 20 due to injury. I could see those each dropping by about two if they're healthy, just because the way they're structuring it and because the league is coming down so hard on it, I think they're going to do a little bit more staggered rest.
Yeah, I've actually got them all projected at about 76 to 75 games, so a couple of extra ones, with the exception of Durant, as opposed to last year. So I think that's something that people do need to pay attention to. But we don't. People will go, oh, they're going to rest in their fantasy leagues, but we don't know when that might be. They might rest them in January. They might, you know, have a rest here. Have one in December. Have one in March. It's not going to be, oh, we get to March and you're going to sit out six games in March. Like, I don't think it's going to be that. It's, as you said, it's staggered. It's going to be planned. It's going to be, you know, to get the best out of them, not playing, you know, 70 games in a row, and then let's just sit the next six out. I don't think that doesn't work from a medical point of view, and it doesn't make sense for a continuity point of view either.
Right, for the Warriors and for just about everybody else, what I would look for is long road trips and back-to-backs, because those are the times that coaches can do it. And the Warriors are a little bit different, that they will sometimes rest players on the front end of a back-to-back just to balance it out a little bit. And especially if the league's trying to get a little bit harder on not resting multiple guys in the same high-profile game, I think you could see a little bit more of that as well.
Let's talk about who did arrive on this team, and they're all players, or they're going to be on the bench, but I think there are upgrades over the guys that they are taking the spots of. And the first one of those is Uncle Pete, Nick Young, who comes in and sort of fills in that Ian Clark role from last season. He was quite good in LA last year. I think some of the stuff about him was a little bit overblown in terms of how good he actually was defensively, but he provides that shooting. We know the Warriors are going to be shooting a ton of threes. So Young comes in and sort of just fills that Clark role, basically, doesn't he?
I think that's the best read of it right now from kind of what's out there. There will be some questions defensively in terms of where he goes, but something that was underappreciated on the Warriors' second unit last year. So I define second unit as when Curry's out. You know, it's kind of hard to do with the Warriors because they don't do like Mark Jackson-style hockey subs. But what Nick Young can bring is they didn't really have a high-usage offensive player on that second unit. Klay Thompson, you know, he can ratchet up a little bit, which he has in the past. But really, like Iguodala, Draymond Green, David West, those guys like to facilitate. Those guys like to move the ball. And so having a player who is comfortable taking shots is actually something of real value. And Clark, while he provided value in a couple different ways and just being able to catch and shoot, having somebody who's more willing to take those shots could really help the offense for those units. And of course, then Young would be the beneficiary.
Yeah, and he's a guy that hit over 2 threes per game last year. I think some people are getting a little bit excited about him for fantasy this year. I don't really know why.
I agree with that.
He's getting picked at 137 on Yahoo, and there's absolutely no reason for that whatsoever. Yeah, look, he might hit 2 threes a game. He also might score 6 points a game, and that's the only shots that he hits. He's never getting assists. He never gets steals. He won't block a shot. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't get to the line. He's going to hit three, so he's going to be in that group of guys that you can stream in, Troy Daniels, Wayne Ellington, that can hit 2 threes a game, and that's where his value is. But there is in absolutely no circumstance should he be getting drafted in any sort of 12-team, 14-team, 16-team league, because the role's just not there. He's not a good fantasy player anyway, but there's just literally no role that would make any sense for him to be picked in that zone. But he can be a help for this team with what you said, with that shooting, but I don't understand why he's getting picked there. It just makes no sense to me at all.
I mean, the upside's really limited too. I mean, he's not going to start. He's probably fifth or sixth on their perimeter depth chart, even if he does well, just because there are a bunch of all-stars in front of him. So he's not, in case of an injury, maybe that would change a little bit. But in terms of full strength, it's hard to imagine. I mean, think back to last year. McCobb played 15 minutes a game. Clark played 15 minutes a game. Livingston played 18. It's hard for a guy who doesn't provide much in the other stat columns to really do that much in around that amount of playing time.
Yeah, and look, even if, say, Klay Thompson went down for a month and Young moved in and started, he's not going to be touching the ball that much, and he's not all of a sudden going to start learning how to rebound, pass, steal, block. He's not going to do any of those things. He's just going to do what he does, and instead of hitting 1.8 threes, he might hit 2.5 threes for a month. And while that's interesting, it still doesn't make him this awesome fantasy option. Now, the other guy that has been a good fantasy player at times in his career, mainly when he's been in Sacramento, is Omri Caspi, who comes across here. I know that you've had plenty of things to say about Omri Caspi last season, and the Pelicans would pretty much enjoy him right there as their starting three this year, but we're not going to rehash poor Dell Demps' decisions because we could be here all day. But he slots in and takes the Matt Barnes role pretty much for this season, doesn't he?
He does, and that's a little bit of a concern in terms of fantasy, because the Matt Barnes role only existed when Kevin Durant got hurt.
That's true.
He was originally, that was going to be Jose Calderon, and Jose Calderon wasn't going to play. And so with Caspi, he does have a big fan in Steve Kerr. Kerr really likes Omri Caspi. I do too. And that's good. That's a bodes well for him. But again, like we talked about with Nick Young, there are just so many guys in front of him that it'll be a challenge. And I could see him working himself into a rotation role. But when that's what you're saying, when you're saying he could get a rotation role, it's hard to talk about that in terms of fantasy. And I think the benefit with Caspi is that I don't think he's probably getting overdrafted. Don't draft him. But, if he ends up looking like he's establishing a role, he could be reasonably efficient in a limited spot.
We're talking about Caspi, and we talked about McCaw a little bit later. I'm a huge Pat McCaw fan. I thought he really showed showed his mettle in the playoffs last season. Do you think that he can provide a bigger role for the Warriors this year? You're playing potentially at the three. He played he started some games there when Durant was out last season. As the primary backup wing on this team, do you think that he can put himself ahead of Young and ahead of Caspi into that role and be that guy who, and this is how I've always sort of looked at McCord, if he stays with the Warriors, be the guy that eventually transitions into the Andre Iguodala role?
I think he's more of a long-term play than a short-term one. I like McCall a lot. I'm a big fan of where he's going. But the addition of Nick Young really hurts his opportunities this season. And that's not necessarily the worst thing for the Warriors in the long term, just because it is going to take some time for him to get into that role. They just re-signed Iguodala. He's going to be on the roster for a while. So for the eventuality of this, yeah, I think McCaw is going to be a good player. I think he's going to work. But I'm concerned that he's not going to get that opportunity this season. And so if we're talking for a 2017-18 fantasy basketball preview, I would be concerned about it from that perspective, because I don't think he's going to get the chance with Nick Young presumably ahead of him and with Sean Livingston still there. You know, if one of those two guys was not on this team or was hurt, then I think McCaw is the guy to step in. But as of right now, they're both around and they're both healthy.
McCall's a guy that I've spoken about in terms of dynasty type leagues that you're going to have to wait 3-4 years, but the ability for him to hit threes, get some assists, get some steals at a really high rate as well, and be relatively efficient can be a useful combination, but it is going to take a while. He is a restricted free agent after this season, so we don't know what his future is going to hold in that respect. He could find himself on another team, and that could open up a whole heap of things for him. But in terms of this season, you're right, Danny, he's just not going to see enough minutes to be an impactful guy, but I do like what he can do down the track. In terms of the guys that left this team, we've already mentioned Matt Barnes has gone, Ian Clark's gone to the Pelicans, and James Michael McAdoo has signed a two-way deal with the Sixers. I want to get to the NBA draft, though, Danny, because the Warriors swindled the Bulls, but it's not all that hard to do. But they bought that second-round pick for $3.5 million and selected Jordan Bell, who could be a defensive monster. But like a lot of these guys that we're talking about, in terms of him actually getting on the court this season, the opportunities seem really limited.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar story to a lot of these guys. But with Bell, it's even a bigger concern because for fantasy, he doesn't have the upside that somebody like Caspi or Nick Young or even Patrick McCaw does, because what he does best is stuff that doesn't necessarily show up on the box score. Sometimes, steals, blocks, rebounds can. But he's a good help defender. He can impact shots. And he's still not comfortable offensively, especially at the NBA level. So, I mean, maybe if there's a G League fantasy league that's out there, he could be fun for that. But I like Jordan Bell. It's just going to take him some time. And again, the Warriors are just so loaded that it makes it hard for any individual person to really put up much in any stats column.
I'm going to actually disagree with you a little bit there about his fantasy value, because his ability to get steals and blocks is so high that even if he scored 7 points a game, if he had a big role on a different team, if say he was playing on the Bulls and they played him 27 minutes a night and he scored 8 points a game, his ability to get steals and blocks and rebounds in those high numbers makes him a super valuable fantasy guy. Yeah. And he is a
Kirilenko style, Millsap style.
Exactly. Just those guys who get those defensive numbers in those high quantities, like 2 blocks a game. Like, there's not that many people. Well, there's no one who gets 2 steals and 2 blocks unless their name is Giannis or Nerlens Noel. They're the only two guys who are really going to challenge for that area. But Bell is that player that in college was able to, we saw him in summer league have a 5-by-5 game with 6 blocks and 5 steals. So he can do that. But the opportunity in Golden State is just not there. So it's a really long-term play that, when I do all the translations for the college guys coming in, I believe he was just straight minute per minute fantasy translations. I think he was a top 10 guy for his ability, for his rebounding, steals, blocks, and field goal percentage, nothing to do with the scoring, but the opportunity is just, there's nothing there, and it's just going to be a long time if that ever gets realized. In the playoffs, we saw, Danny, some lineups with Kevin Durant playing at center. Do you think that Kerr has been, I guess, reluctant to even go with Draymond at center during the regular season. Do you think we're going to see any Durant at center with these super small type lineups, or do you think he'll just go more traditional during the regular season?
I don't even think we're going to see much of Draymond at center during the regular season, because Kerr has so many centers, and it's pretty open that Draymond has talked about before that playing center takes a little bit more out of him. And of course, that's worth it in the playoffs, because those are the games that matter. So I don't think, you know, other than in certain circumstances, the way that I always have, you know, over the last couple of years have treated those lineups in the regular season is break glass in case of emergency. So there will be a 5-minute stretch against a good team where they need something, they need a little jolt, and they'll go to something. But even then, my instinct is that it won't be Durant unless it's a circumstance where Draymond's in foul trouble or something like that, which is actually how it came to be a little bit in the playoffs. It was a game where Draymond, I think he got a questionable third foul early in the second quarter, and they were just like, well, we don't really have anybody else to make this work, so they threw Durant out there. But that's disappointing for a lot of perspectives. I mean, those lineups are among the most fun, not only this year, but in NBA history. But at the same time, I completely understand where Kerr is coming from, because this team has loftier aspirations, and if they don't need to use those lineups to win, why use them that much?
Draymond Green, one of the big questions heading into last season was, you know, how is Kevin Durant going to affect everybody? He's going to take shots. There's going to be drops in usage. But the prevailing wisdom was, yeah, but that's going to give everyone else easier looks and it's going to increase their efficiency. Draymond didn't quite happen that way. His true shooting dropped from 59 down to 52. He hit only 41.7% of his field goal attempts and under 31% of his threes. Is there anything that you saw from watching this team as closely as you did that made any sense as to why his efficiency just dropped off the map?
Not really. I think that he just had the circumstance of, you know, a few of those threes not going in for the last. So he had the ridiculous year in 15-16, the 73 win year, where he shot 38, almost 39% from three. I don't think that's a fair baseline for him, but the 33 that he was around before that, you know, that's pretty reasonable. And so even if you extrapolate that, you know, over a more reasonable sample, then you're probably getting him an extra 10 or so made threes over the course of a year. And that can be a lot. You know, that can be, it's less than one a week. It's more like one every 2 weeks. And his free throw shooting is something to watch as well. It's vacillated a little bit in his career, but he needs to get to the line a little bit more. And I think he needs to get to the basket a little bit more. And that could happen this year. I'm not entirely sure it will, but I mean, it's hard to replicate the other value he brings. So I think you're right that, like, I wonder where his ceiling is in terms of that kind of shooting value, but his floor for everything else is just fascinating.
He was an interesting guy last season. Like, he still was the 19th ranked player in fantasy. He was 12th the year before, so he did have a drop off, and a lot of that is efficiency based, but he did lose, you know, 4 points per game on his scoring. And I've got him about the 19th ranked player this year, but there is some upside there if that shooting comes back, that he can jump up. But after the All-Star break, Danny, like, his shooting got worse. Like, he was a 37% shooter after the break. He averaged under 10 points per game. He found himself fall outside the top 30 in fantasy numbers. Hit 26% from three over that time period. But I think something people may not know is he was also a 79% free throw shooter. So everything was all over the place in terms of his efficiency numbers. And I could never get my head around what the reasoning was behind all of it. So that's why I think that we're just going to have volatility with these numbers, but there's a significant chance that he bounces back, because last year was his worst efficiency season since 2013-14, before he became a regular starter. So there is some hope there for Draymond. I think he's a solid second round player, but if you are looking at him as a second round guy, you have to realize that he's scoring you 10 points a game. The other guys in the top 15 or top 18 are scoring you 20, 25, 27 points per game. And that puts you in a significant hole in the points category. As I say this all the time, is that once you get outside the top 50 fantasy players, there are not many high scoring guys around. So you might have to look at punting that category with Draymond, but he gives you such a leg up, as you mentioned, in his assists, his rebounds, his steals, his blocks. Like, those things are super valuable, but it does require a really specific way of building a team. And he is quite unique in that perspective in those early rounds, as being that only guy who's really anywhere below 15 points per game. That's just how much value he brings in those other areas. Now, we talked about Andre Iguodala already. Do you see him being not a victim, but with his advancing age and preserving for the playoffs, is he a guy that we might see, again, just have his role marginally reduced during the regular season again?
I think that we will, but the biggest reason that that's going to happen is that the final 20 games when Durant was out kind of changed people's calibrations, because he was more of like a 24, 23 minute a game guy from what I recall before Durant got hurt, and then his role ratcheted up, obviously, to replace one of the best players in the league. So I think that player, the player that he was until February, is probably who he will be for right now and for moving forward. And in terms of aging, the nice thing about Iguodala is that his game is going to age reasonably well. You know, he shot 52% from the field last year. His three-point shooting is going to be inconsistent. That's just the way it is with him. He's also reluctant to a point there, so we'll have to see where that goes. But he is a smart passer. He's a wonderful defensive player. So in terms of fantasy, it's always a challenge with guys who are probably better basketball players sometimes than they are better than fantasy players as non-scorers particularly. But I think if you're looking for a role, it's going to be the same as it was.
Iguodala used to be an awesome fantasy player, like a significantly underrated guy as well in his time in Denver and especially in his time in Philadelphia. But we're not looking at him as a great contributor. Look, he is a guy that I think I've got him as 134th at the moment, and that's fine. But if you're in a 10 or 12 team league, taking a guy who doesn't really have any ceiling to get above that at 134 is not really the point of drafting. But you're in a 14 team league, a 16 team league, then he's just going to be solid there. He's going to get you those assists and rebounds and steals and some threes, and his efficiency is fine. But he's getting picked at pick 99 on ESPN, so I don't know what's going on there. There's someone who's getting a little bit warrior happy with that drafting. There is absolutely no way that you want anything to do with Iguodala at pick 99, and I assume the majority of people that listen to this podcast will be aware of that, and they won't be reaching for Iguodala at that spot. There's just absolutely no value there. Now let's get into the weeds a little bit here, Danny. We're talking about some backup big men on this team. We've got Kevon Looney and Damian Jones, two of the team's recent first round draft picks who haven't really had the opportunity to perform all that well. Looney's been bothered by hip issues. Jones was limited at the start of last season with a pectoral tear. Who do you think's ahead out of those two guys at the moment?
Jones is pretty clearly ahead. I think that he has a spot. I was actually surprised that he ended up not getting a spot in the kind of in the rotation just because everybody came back. You know, my expectation was that one of the three would at least leave and then Jones would fill that spot. JaVale was the leader in terms of that. That's what it was expected. It looked like somebody was going to pay him. Nobody paid him, so he came back. But Jones is, I think he's ready for that opportunity. It's worthwhile to mention that a big part of the reason why he didn't last year was because he fell in the draft because he tore that pectoral muscle. And so he just was a little bit behind on the process. But I thought that he looked good at the end of his G League, or actually it was the D League then, time last year. And he looked good in Summer League. I mean, he runs the floor. He's kind of a hybrid between a couple of the Warriors bigs because he runs the floor well, kind of like JaVale. He hustles. And his physical tools are more in that range. But offensively, I think of him more like where David West shoots. So like he likes the mid-range better than the post. So I don't know where he's going to be long-term. But for this season, he's behind three other full-fledged centers. So he's not going to get much opportunity.
What do you think his biggest strength is as a player?
I think he understands exactly what he needs to do to get on the floor with the Warriors. And so that's, you know, run the floor, make the most of the opportunities he can present. So I think his per minute stuff could actually be pretty good when he's out there because he knows what he needs to do. And he doesn't have any delusions of grandeur, and he's not going to, you know, that's Nick Young's probably his biggest problem is that he thinks he can do everything. And Damian Jones being around this team, basically getting his NBA start with this team, he knows what this team needs at center, and I think he can work within that.
He's a pretty good shot blocker. He blocked over two shots per game in the D League last season for Santa Cruz. So that is obviously brings value. Your free throws are a concern, but he's clearly just a long-term guy to watch. Because you did reference there are the three centers on this team. So let's talk about those guys now. Zaza Pachulia started last season. David West plays his 12 to 13 minutes. Then JaVale McGee comes and plays his 10, 11 minutes per game. Do you think that they'll just continue to run those three guys in those limited minute rotation pretty much the same as what they did last year?
Yeah, I think that it's possible that they change kind of some of the alignment stuff, but I think the general structure will stay the same. Pachulia starts games, doesn't finish them. You know, JaVale gets a spot somewhere in there, and then David West is probably going to play a similar role. Kerr is very advanced in terms of the way he runs his offense, but he's very conservative when it comes to rotations. And I've criticized him for that before, but I think that in this sort of a circumstance, that reliability is kind of good for the players and he knows what they can do. So then the big question mark there is going to be, can they all stay healthy? I mean, Pachulia played 70 games last year. West played about 70. JaVale played 77, which is actually surprising considering, you know, his history with a bunch of different maladies. So that is the big question is like, so if somebody got hurt, would they really ratchet up somebody or would they just kind of slide Damian Jones into that spot? But for fantasy purposes, it's going to be hard because nobody's really going to be putting up those that much in those limited minutes.
Yeah, they shouldn't be anywhere near standard leagues. If Pachulia is getting picked at 133, I don't really understand that. He's a guy that maybe squeezes into the top 200. Someone's clearly taking the piss with JaVale McGee on ESPN, picking him at pick 99. I don't really know what's happening there, and West is similar. We're talking about
Here's a good thing for JaVale. If anybody's thinking about drafting him high, he started 10 games last year and averaged less than 10 minutes a game over the season. Like, that is incredible. And I'm a big fan of JaVale. I was an advocate for the Warriors signing him and then keeping him, but he's not going to do that. And the times that he will are probably going to come out of the blue. So you can try to pick him up, stream him, do whatever you're going to do there.
He's an interesting DFS guy occasionally. Like, say that,
sure.
Say Weston Pachulia were out and then they had to play him 19 minutes. Like, in that time, he could have three blocks and have one of those weird quarters where he scores, 8 points in 5 minutes and returns minimum salary value really easy because we've seen him do it multiple times in that limited time. He's just not going to get the big playing time at all consistently. So it is an interesting situation. But let's talk about some of these bigger name guys. The Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. Let's start with KD, who a lot of people consider could be the number one pick in fantasy, and I've got absolutely no problem with that. I do have that slight concern with maybe the games played being a little bit reduced or the minutes coming down, but KD is pretty much just going to do what he did, and if he can take it up to his NBA Finals level of play, then he's pretty much guaranteed the number one spot. Nothing's going to really change for KD and Curry and their dynamic this season, is it? Well, even though it did change about halfway through last season.
I think it'll be similar for the regular season to what it was for the part of the year after mid-January, but before Durant got hurt, where he takes over for certain stretches, but then they kind of have an ebb and a flow with it. What makes Durant fascinating from a fantasy perspective is that he's ruthlessly efficient. I mean, he's an incredible player in that sense, but then you just get a little bit infuriated because if he had a little bit more volume, then he would just be this dynamo in fantasy because he does all of the other things pretty well. He's a good shot blocker for his position. He can get some steals. I don't think of it as a real strength for him, but he can do it. And it's just not really what he does on this team, if he was getting the usage, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but if he was getting the usage like of Anthony Davis or of Russ, like the numbers would be appalling, but that's just not who he is. That's not what he is. And so I'm not sure that I would necessarily, and it's funny because I don't do as much of the year-long fantasy stuff, but my instinct would be not to take him number one just because he's not really a bell cow in that sense, that he's not going to be providing the value, but he's just so efficient that it's a nice little baseline for the rest of your team.
Yeah, look, and when you're talking about rotisserie type leagues, his efficiency numbers are he had a true shooting of 65% last year, which is out of control for a guy that's taking so many perimeter shots as what he is. He only had a usage of 27%, which is down from the 31 that he had the season prior in Oklahoma City. And you're right, if he had that usage back at 30%, then I don't think we'd be really questioning him being the number one pick because he'd be averaging 30 points. He'd average still the 8 and 5, and he's a real chance to be a player. And there aren't many of these guys who are around who averages 1.5 steals, threes, and blocks per game. Yeah, he only missed out on steals last year, was at 1.1, so he does have that. I think he's got that upside to be a triple 1.5 sort of a player, and there's maybe two of those guys in the NBA that can get to that level in all three of those categories. So if you took him at one, no problem. I'd probably look at him as more of a 4 or 5 sort of a player with the group of guys like Russ and Harden and Yanni all around that spot there with him and Towns also. But you really can't go wrong in that top five with Durant or with his teammate in Steph Curry who again. It struggled a little bit at the start of the season, but I think people were overblowing the struggles that he had. It's just that he wasn't putting up the historic numbers that he was the season before, but he was still really, really good last season, Danny. So I think we expect more of second half Steph Curry, where, as you said, in January, they sort of got more comfortable with each other, and he's just going to produce at a similar level again.
There was a lingering question last year about where Curry was going to be in relation to his previous seasons, because in 15-16, when he won the unanimous MVP and had one of the best offensive seasons in league history, that seemed like an aberration. But so my baseline for him, or my expectation, baseline's too strong. My expectation for him was maybe more like his 14-15 season when he won his first MVP, had a really nice year, and he fell broadly below that standard. I still feel like that's more of what I expect with him than last year. He ended up at 41% from three. I think that'll be a little bit higher, maybe in the 43, 44 range, because that's more where he's been. But in terms of volume and all of the other stats, I think those will be about the same. You know, I think his assists are going to be similar. Steals will probably be similar. So really, I mean, that's a pretty wonderful player when you're thinking about it, where he adds a lot and doesn't take that much away.
Over the past four seasons, his end-of-season fantasy rank has been 2, 1, 1, and 5. So you're getting some pretty significantly consistent numbers. He did drop by 5 points per game last year, and that's part of the reason that he fell from the number one player to being the number five guy. But if you're stuck at pick six and Steph Curry's there, then I don't think you should have any concerns about taking him. The efficiency is fantastic. As you mentioned, he's going to hit a multitude of threes. He gets those assists. He's a very, very good player in terms of getting steals and could average. Actually, he dropped to under 2 steals per game last year when he'd been over that the previous 2 years. But in the last 40 games of the year, he averaged those 2 steals per game. So once he got a bit more comfortable, it sort of started returning to normal. He hit 4.5 threes over that time period as well, which is, again, getting closer back to what we'd seen previously. So if he finished the season as the number three guy, I don't think anyone would be surprised. He just does so many different things, and it's all just consistent, and that's great for fantasy. Now, Klay Thompson, again, a similar sort of guy that we just know what we're going to get, a 20-point scorer who's going to be efficient, who's going to hit a ton of threes, but his value is lower than these guys because he's, you know, much smaller rebounding numbers, lower assist numbers, and his, you know, elite perimeter defense doesn't necessarily translate into defensive stats. Do you think that Klay could be a guy, just based on the way he plays defense, that gets himself up to, you know, 1, 1.2 steals per game to really sort of, you know, that would boost him up, you know, 10 spots or so in fantasy rankings?
He's never really done it, so I wouldn't really expect that. I mean, he has always been this exception that proves the rule in terms of blocks and steals and quality defense. And that's just, he's more of a kind of a positional guy. He forces his guy to take tough shots. He's more so than being in the passing lanes. It's more Steph Curry's responsibility. So I wouldn't expect it. He's proven me wrong before, so I'm not going to write off that possibility. But with Klay, you kind of feel like you're getting what you paid for with him, where he's a reliable scorer. And what makes him unusual and interesting in terms of a lot of these formats is that his combustible games kind of come from nowhere. Like, I've never been able to, ahead of time, predict when he's going to go off. But, you know, he'll have, you think back to the 37-point quarter, the 60-point first three quarters against Indiana last year. He'll do that from time to time. So he's a different kind of, he's aggregate consistent. He's not game-to-game consistent. But I wouldn't expect that sort of a wholesale improvement from him at this point, considering what we've seen so far.
He's getting drafted relatively early, I guess. Picked 28 on Yahoo and 26 on ESPN. I say relatively early because last year he was the 34th ranked player. So that's expecting a level of improvement from Klay this year. And we've already talked about, we think that he might play actually a minute or so less this year. So I don't think that taking him at that spot, which is just outside the second round in most formats, is necessarily a great decision in standard type leagues, whereas he's more of a back end third round sort of player, or you maybe even start at the fourth. So it seems to happen a lot in leagues this year, where players are expected to improve upon what they did the year before, despite the situation they're in being less favorable. And Klay Thompson, well, it's not a less favorable situation, just that we think that he might not play those 34 minutes, and then you're expecting him to actually improve on what he did last season, which could be a bit of a stretch. If he was to improve anywhere, Danny, what do you think he could actually take up from last season?
I think he's become a better passer over time, and the Warriors system is so egalitarian that I could just see his assist number kicking up a little bit, kind of by just random chance. You know, he was at 2.1 last year. If that went up to 2.5, 2.7, you know, something in that range, it wouldn't totally surprise me. And, you know, maybe he gets a little bit better on blocks, just because if he spends a little bit more time on smaller guys, sometimes he can pick up one or two that way. But it's just not really a strength in his game. I think he's going to be pretty much what he was. And then the big question is going to be volume. And something to watch with him, especially for those who would either think of trading him or trading for him, is to see how it works with Nick Young on the second unit. Because if Young starts taking a bunch of shots there, the biggest loser in terms of offense could actually be Klay Thompson, because that's the time that he sometimes gets into a little bit of a rhythm. And if Nick Young is taking those shots, maybe Clay's numbers drop a little bit. I don't think it'd be a huge deal, and that might be an opportunity to sell high on him a little bit earlier because you could see a little bit of the writing on the wall.
Unlike a guy like Draymond, who if Green loses shots and loses points, it doesn't affect his value much because it comes from all these other categories.
Right.
With Thompson, his value comes from points and threes. So if the shots drop off by one or two per game, that can have a significant impact on his overall rank. So it is something that is worth paying attention to. And it's another reason why I don't want to pick him there at pick 28 there. I just feel that it's too high. Now, this next question might be a tough one, Danny, because I don't really know how we're going to like look at it in terms of this team. And that's who is a breakout candidate on this team?
I don't think they have one.
Yeah,
I mean, really the way that it would happen is by injury. And so then if you wanted to look at who has the upside, I would say Nick Young would probably be if Klay Thompson got hurt, but he's been pretty consistent in terms of that. And maybe even if Durant, I wonder how they would handle that now with their current roster. Might be McCaw again, could be him. And then the problem in terms of the bigs is there are just so many of them that even if a guy burst into the role, what they would do is they would just still split the pie probably similarly. They would just give it to different people. So if Zaza Pachulia missed some time, they would probably split those minutes three ways. So nobody's really a breakout candidate in that sort of a sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Look, everyone's got a fairly consistent role. If anyone, it's going to be McCaw, but it is going to require injuries and long-term injuries for that to be the case. But there's just nothing that's, you know, looks like there's no openings, there's no opportunities for these guys. That's why I said at the start, you know, it's a fairly boring team to talk about for fantasy. In terms of value, guys, there's not a lot there. Like, everyone's getting drafted in a similar spot to where they should. As I said, Clay probably a little bit too high, and yeah, we're ignoring the stupidity of JaVale and Andre Iguodala going inside the top 100. And Nick Young is being drafted in leagues, and Sean Livingston, like, we just ignore that because we know realistically that that's not going to be something that happens. Before I let you go, Danny, the Vegas over-under is at a pretty large 67.5. Is this a one that you would take an over? Would you take an under? Or would you be looking at it as a stay away?
I think it's a stay away, but if I had to pick between the two, I would say over because they are a wonderful regular season team. Even with the idea of only playing guys 34, 33 minutes a game, they're just better than everybody else. And adding Nick Young, adding Omri Caspi makes them a better regular season team because they're deeper. The second unit last year was a little bit shaky, so I think they'll be better that way. And while they were overall healthy last year, Durant missing 20 games certainly didn't help. So I could see that overall being pretty similar. So I would stay away just because, I mean, we have to take a step back and appreciate how many wins 68 is. Like, 68 is a ton of wins.
Yep.
So I just wouldn't want to throw my hard-earned money on that. But I think it's better than pay this team to win fewer games than they did last year because, you know, that's a hard thing to say as well.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It is a huge line, but when you look at it realistically, you go, well, yeah, they can ease their way to that number, it feels like, with how strong this team is. Danny, thank you for coming on. Now, before you go, do you want to give a plug to your book, which is coming out soon, and anything else that you've got on the boil?
Sure. So I have a book that's coming out, 100 Things Warriors Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's with Triumph Publishing, coming out on November 1st. It's very excited about it. I worked on it a lot of last season. And then my writing this year will be at The Athletic for the Warrior stuff and probably Salary Cap for the other teams they cover. And then I'll have work at Sporting News SI. And then I will be doing Dunked On with Nate Duncan, like before, the Twitter NBA show with him. And then Real Jam Radio is my weekly show, which is usually me and a guest talking about whatever we want to talk about. And, you know, if you're very interested in the Warriors, there's a very good chance that you'll be hearing something about from me about podcasting yet, but it's not ready to announce at this moment.
So stay tuned to Danny's announcement there. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny LaRue and check out his book, of course. Go pre-order that wherever you can pre-order books and check out the rest of his stuff, which is always fantastic. Danny, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. JaVale McGee.